Hi, I am Pinakin Munshi, and today we are going to cover chapter 3, which is about inventory control techniques. So maintenance of a trim and agile body provides you with many benefits in your personal life as well as in your career development. And keeping bare minimum inventory to run maximum operations with maximum efficiency offers similar benefits to the financial well-being of the business unit. So inventory is a temporary monetary investment. Hence, the business unit incurs opportunity cost, or what we call as the cost of capital. Now, why do we call it opportunity cost? Opportunity cost is because the money that you are blocking in the inventory could have been used for some other purpose of the organization, which will result in better returns or profitability for the organization. So hence, the money that we block in inventory, you know, there are two parts of it. One is the cost of capital, because that money that you are blocking is going to cost you, either in terms of borrowing from a bank or a financial institution, or the returns that you are providing on the equity to your shareholders. So the opportunity cost or cost of capital arising from the money tied up in the inventory, which could be beneficially put to use for other business purpose. So the analogy we have given with the trim and agile body is also true for the organization, that for a business, if you have to remain agile, you have to remain trim, then you have to trim your inventories. You work with minimum inventories to have a profitable and an agile organization. So what do larger inventories need? So when you hold larger inventory, you require more storage space, greater handling, more amount of handling, personnel to protect them from deterioration, pilferage, obsolescence. So storage space, I'll just give an example. One of the company that I worked for, we used to have the warehouse, and the warehouse was falling short for finished goods. So we wanted a new warehouse. And mind you, the global leaders, it was a multinational company. So they said, sorry, we are not going to approve capex for a warehouse. Very simple reason. By creating a warehouse, you're not adding any value to the goods. You're in fact incurring additional cost. So they said, why do you require a warehouse? Please look at your practices and see how you can reduce the inventory so that you can work with your existing warehouse. So storage space. If it is a leased warehouse, you are paying for the warehouse space. If it's your own warehouse, you are also paying for the maintaining the warehouse, construction of the warehouse, greater handling, because you require even the handling equipment, either in the form of reach truck or forklift trucks or pallet trucks, whatever the case may be. Personnel to protect them from deterioration, because when you keep the material over a period of time, they tend to deteriorate. Even chemicals, etc., sometimes they have a shelf life, that is expiry. Pilferage, many a times there are damages, pilferages, somebody may actually steal the material. And this normally typically happens in case of e-commerce, where you have expensive goods, you know, like mobile phones, etc., which get pilfered. Obsolescence. You find material is lying in your inventory for extended period of time, and after a while it becomes obsolete. That means your model has changed, your finished product has changed, and the raw material or the component that you're holding is no longer of use to you. It's only worth the scrap value. So hence, steps taken to keep inventories at a minimum practical level directly adds to the earning of a business unit. So the thing is, the lower the inventory you have less of all these costs, and that will add to your profits and the earnings. We are looking at the various costs now relating to carrying of the inventory. So first is the inventory carrying cost or the holding cost. So it is the sum of the cost of capital, because if you're running a business now, let us say that you have put in some capital, but to run the business, you require the working capital, because you are going to supply material to customers who are going to pay you, let's say, after 60 days or 90 days. So your capital is going to be blocked. Also, you need capital to buy the materials and to hold the inventories. So there is a cost of that capital, which can be either in the form of interest, or it can be in the form of, you have the equity as a capital, and the dividend you pay to the shareholders, that is the cost of the capital. Variable cost of keeping the material on hand, such as storage and handling. So when you're bringing the material, you need a warehouse. Warehouse is going to cost you. It can be a leased warehouse, can be your own warehouse, but it's going to cost you money. Handling, because if you're going to have any kind of reach truck, forklift truck, movement of the goods is going to require people, equipment, fuel. So all that is going to add to your money. Shrinkage. Now, it could be that some products, there is a deterioration in the form of a shrinkage, etc., which means that the yield on that product will reduce over a period of time. Deterioration, as we saw in the previous slide, shelf life. Many products have a shelf life, and beyond the shelf life, you have to then discard that material. And the cost of disposing of that material sometimes can be high, especially in the chemical sector. In chemical industry, anything that you cannot sell and has to be disposed of or scrapped also incurs a cost, because it has to be disposed in a eco-friendly manner. Obsolescence. We already talked about, you have inventories, but because your finished product has changed, you no longer require that material. So obsolescence is another thing. Taxes and insurance. So you're paying insurance on your warehouse. That's a cost. So all these things are actually adding to the variable cost, which needs to be kept in mind. Here is an example given of the inventory carrying cost. And these are, at a minimum, how much it can be, and on a maximum, how much it can be. Just I want to point out that currently the company that I am consulting, for them, the cost of capital is 15.5%. So imagine it's even higher than what maximum is mentioned here. So there can be cost on account of loss and breakage, inventory management, depreciation, because if you're holding the inventory for more than a year, there is a depreciation also which applies on it. Plant maintenance, disposal and obsolescence. Disposal, I talked about, there is a cost even for disposal of things. So it's not that you can just sell it to anybody. You have to sell it to people who are authorized to handle or dispose of that material. Taxes, which may be applicable, insurance for the goods and for the warehouse. So your total stock holding cost can vary between 18% and 30%. So you can imagine what is the cost of holding inventory. Salary and wages, 2,75,000. Cost of security, because obviously to avoid pilferage and any untoward things, you require security. Unauthorized removal of material, so you require security. So all these costs, and here the example tells you that your cost is coming to almost 30%, 29.75%, which is close to 30%. So this is another example of the balance sheet, where various costs are compared. And as you can see, that the inventory becomes the largest current asset that you are holding of all the current assets, and it is accounting for 20% of your total assets. So how significant can the inventory value be in an organization? So inventory carrying cost, if the average value of the inventory is 20% of its annual sales, the average annual cost to carry this inventory would be 29.75%, which we saw in the earlier slide, and 20% of your working capital or current assets is your inventory. So it comes to 5.95%. That means 5.95% is the cost, overall cost of carrying this inventory. Now imagine that your gross profit or your gross margin is 10% with an inventory carrying cost of 5.95%. So even if you reduce your inventory carrying cost by 2% and you make it 3.95, then your gross margin will go from 10% to 12%. So this inventory carrying cost is significant. So how do you maintain lean inventories? So what the first thing is optimization of customer requirement. So as we saw in the previous chapter, ideal thing will be make to order. That means customer places the order and then you produce the material. But even there, if your raw material lead time is high, you will be still required to hold raw material for it. So, but what can we do? How can we optimize the inventory requirement? So if we can estimate a customer requirement more accurately, we can keep our safety stocks at a much lower level. So imagine that my lead time, procurement lead time is 1 month. I require 300 tons per month. How much safety stock should I hold? Now, I'm giving you only part of the information. Suppose I told you that my consumption is fixed. It is 300 tons per month. 1 month is my lead time and my supplier is very reliable. So if I tell him that I want the material delivered on the first of every month, he will deliver that material on the first without any fail. Now in such a case, I don't need to hold any safety stock because I can place the orders 1 month in advance in such a way that he delivers the material to me on the first of every month. So here, although the lead time is high, I really don't need to hold the inventory. Yes, if I'm not sure about my demand, whether it's going to be 300 or it's going to be 400 or it can be 450, or whether my supplier will supply the material exactly on the first or he will supply on the 10th of the month or the 15th of the month. If I have that insecurity, then I need to hold a safety stock to guard against both the fluctuation in the demand and the fluctuation in the lead time. So we need to establish a demand planning process, and by optimizing it, we can minimize the delta between the planned and the actual customer requirement. So if you know the customer requirement fairly accurately, then we can plan the inventories in such a way that we are not carrying huge inventories. So this is one way of optimizing. Forecasting errors have to be reduced by proper selection of mathematical forecasting methods. So there are various statistical and mathematical forecasting methods available. And you have to select the appropriate method which is suitable for your product. So by streamlining the range of goods, we can focus our demand planning process on fewer critical products. To give an example, one of the car manufacturer used to manufacture 3 or 4 variant of one particular model. I'm giving an actual case. They found that the number of cars sold in each of the variant was not very large, but overall the car had a good demand. What they did was they consolidated the 3 or 4 models into a single model. That means if you wanted that particular model, you only got one model, and they called it the executive model. So instead of making 4 different products with different features and different components, they started making a single car with one standard model. So this is called streamlining of the range of goods. So instead of making 5 variants, if you make only 3 variants, your complexity gets reduced. The number of components you need to hold gets reduced, and the flexibility in your system improves. So we can, in such a case, predict our demand more accurately. Another example I'll give you. Let us say that we are talking of a shirt. a company is making shirts from a particular fabric and particular fashion, particular style. So let's say it's full sleeve with short collars and it's got a pocket on the left hand side, etc. Now they have got various sizes, starting from small to medium to large to extra large, XX, L, triple X, whatever. Now, if they try to forecast the requirement for this, it'll be very difficult. It's very difficult to forecast individual shirt sale. There you can even club the total requirement, because if you have to order the fabric, you can just look at the overall number, because the consumption of fabric will vary depending upon the size, but not to that extent. And somewhere it will tend to even out. So you reduce the range of products, it will simplify the complexity as far as the forecasting is concerned, or the demand planning is concerned. Demand planning in collaboration with customers usually results in more accurate forecast. This is another thing that we have been doing. We also have very close interaction with the customer, and we ask the customer what their requirement is going to be month to month. And it's a rolling forecast they provide. So typically they give a 6-month forecast. So they give a forecast for the next month and for the next 6 months. And they revise this forecast every month. So suddenly if there is a change in forecast, they will tell you that, okay, my demand is going to now go down. Or we expect the demand to be less than what we have projected earlier, or it is likely to be higher. So this helps you also to consolidate the requirement of all your customers and come to a very realistic forecast. So this is, one example of how you can improve your forecast accuracy. Many organizations have this system. So you have first, you adjust the history file, or basically you're looking at the historical sale, what actually has been the market demand. Then you prepare an initial forecast. So you may use a statistical or a mathematical model, and you come to a forecast. Then you have a consensus meeting. That means you have a meeting with the marketing, and then you say, what is your gut feeling and what do you feel will be the forecast or demand for this particular product? And accordingly, then you revise the forecast. And there can be another reviewing committee which will further, say that, okay, we feel that this forecast may not come because of market reasons, or some development which is happening in the market, or the seasonal fluctuation. It can happen that they say, oh, because it's a marriage season, the demand can be higher. So they will review it, and then you have the final forecast which is communicated to the production and which is used in the MRP for planning the raw material. So how do you optimize on the supply side, and what are the wrong actions we normally do? So let's look at some of them. We slightly overestimate the procurement lead times or procurement quantities, or both. And this happens. Let us say that your procurement lead time is 15 days. What the procurement people will tend to do is to be on the safer side. In the system, in the MRP system, they'll say it is 20 days. They are actually somewhere trying to cover up their inefficiencies also, because suppose that there is a delay in releasing the purchase order, then the replenishment will be delayed. So what they do is they provide for a higher lead time than what actual lead time is possible. And here, one of the solution could be that the material manager directly gets involved in the discussion with the supplier, and you select the supplier based on the service level that he promises. So if he says that I'm going to take 15 days, maybe you need to try and negotiate and tell him that, sorry, not acceptable, or we will choose another supplier if you're going to take 15 days. We cannot tolerate anything above 10 days or 7 days, something like this. The replenishment lead time of supplier and transport times are rounded up with a little buffer. Again, the same thing. So like you overestimate the lead time, here what you do is you know that it takes 5 days for the transportation and 10 days for the supplier. So instead of 15, then you round it off to 20 days. A very normal practice. We also add some leeway to the safety ranges or safety stocks in our material requirement planning. So when we are doing the planning, you know, we require a safety stock as per the formula to be, let's say, 200 units. But we'll say, no, let's keep it a little higher. So that 200 becomes 300. Now imagine 200 and 300, that means you have increased your safety stock by 50%. So in this solution, we do not improve our processes. Instead, we build stocks to cover the deficiencies of the system. Deficiency in releasing the purchase order, deficiency in negotiation with the supplier, deficiency in transportation and getting all the material. Another thing I'd like to point out here is, I have seen this in the organization, that we have a target. We have said that we will sell this product 1,200 tons per annum. Now, 1,200 tons per annum would come to 100 tons per month. When it comes to giving a forecast, the salespeople are thinking, suppose I say 70 tons, my boss will fire me. He'll say your target is 100. So what he'll do, he knows that he's not going to sell 100, but he will give a target, a forecast of 100. Although he is fully aware that he is only going to get 70 tons of orders during the month. And this is how sometimes you are building up inventory and carrying higher inventories. So further on the supply side optimization, safety stock. We must define the safety stock for each material. Safety stock is a must, as I said, because in an actual world, in a real world, you can never be very sure of the lead times and the demand. So there'll be fluctuation in the market demand, and there will be fluctuation. Even the customer has given you a forecast, he will likely deviate from that forecast because there are so many things happening. It's a very dynamic world. So you need to carry some safety stock. It's absolutely necessary that we find the cause for each stock out and attempt to eliminate it forever. So there is a classic image, you know, of a riverbed with rocks inside, and there is a boat. Now the height of the water in the river is the safety stock. So when the safety stock is there, the rocks, they are far below the water level and the boat can sail quietly. But when the stock level comes down, when the safety stock comes down, then the rocks start protruding and they will actually obstruct the boat. The point here is that we try to find out what are those rocks, why we are stocking out. So what are the inefficiencies in the system which are resulting in delay? So it can be the internal inefficiencies in terms of timely release of purchase order or communication of the purchase order to the supplier, or there is a delay in the transportation of goods from the supplier to your premises. There is a delay in, let's say, inspection of the material. There is a delay in some other process. It's necessary to find out the root cause and to eliminate it, to address it. Our safety stock should only compensate for uncertainties that we have not caused. So what it means is, uncertainties that we have not caused means things which are beyond our control. And what is beyond our control? Market demand. What is beyond our control? Let us say there is a transport strike or there is some bandh somewhere because of which the truck cannot come. So things which are out of our control, we provide safety stock only for those. We don't provide safety stock to cover inefficiencies of the procurement department or the internal department like the stores, etc.